You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and no, that's not how this works. Hello, and welcome to episode 413 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm your host, Seth Miller, and occasionally I even say things that make sense. Joined this evening by the ever-enjoyable Fosma Moon. Fos, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I just had trouble actually saying a random number, so that's
interesting. Numbers are complicated.
Yeah. The inimitable Fosma Mood. There's so many good ways to miss you. Anyway, we've got a ton of topics to talk about today, including a massive Dreamliner order. United Airlines, much rumored over the past several months, and especially in the last week or two, has confirmed as of Tuesday morning an order for 200 or 300 new planes, depending on how you look at it.
That's crazy. No wide bodies.
So it's 200 wide bodies, 100 firm Dreamliners and 100 options on Dreamliners through 2032. And then on top of that, it's another 100 737 MAX in. 44 of those are conversions of prior options. And 50 through, I think, 2024 through 26. And then another 56 new ones in 27 and 28. So there's a lot to unpack there. I think the first thing I want to do, though, is play for our listeners a brief clip from Jerry Latterman, who is the airline CFO. And him, he sort of explains how he sees the first 100 planes that are the firm orders and then what the next chunk, you know, the options, how those would fit into the fleet plan. So take a listen to that real quick here.
So first, we are ordering 100 firm 787. We expect them to deliver between 2024 and 2032, so essentially over the next 10 years. Think of those aircraft as replacement aircraft. During that same 10-year period, we have about 120 wide-body aircraft, 767s and 777s, which will hit 30 years of age. In fact, our oldest 767s have already hit 30 years of age. And so it's time, we are very sad to see those aircraft go, but it is time to start thinking about the retirement of those aircraft. So these aircraft, these 100 firm, will replace the 767s and some of the 777s. We have 777s that will fly beyond this time horizon. We also have, we received 100 options, so options to acquire additional 787s, 100. Think about those as opportunities, and I think Andrew may talk a little bit about that as we are able to expand our international franchise.
So listening to that, Fonz, what do you make of it? Do you believe it? I mean,
yes.
I mean, generally. I think it's so right, the replacement part of it is interesting, and then the sort of opportunities, as I think it's a fun word he used to explain it, but like the growth option, the growth opportunity there is also very interesting and has some potential. But I think looking first just at the replacements, obviously the 763s are old, the 764s will be old by the end of the decade. All the 767s are gone by 2030.
I mean, that's substantial, and probably a good swath of the 777s, given that some of them are some of the first 777s off the line back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, some of those are pushing, as he says, you know, some of the 76s are already 30. Some of the 777s will definitely be past 30 when they get there. I think there's a few interesting things about the fleet and how that works, and, you know, how these replacements all sort of play together. One is the 787s are all are going to be much bigger than the 76s in general.
So did they break down the 787s, 9s, or 10s?
They did not offer any guidance on what those are going to be. And all they've said is they have the flexibility to choose.
So is the 78 really bigger than a 76, particularly a 4?
Yes. The 764 to the 788 starts to get close, I think. But I might be exaggerating a little bit, but I look at like the high J763, and I actually asked about that because there is no similar configuration in the 787 family. And their answer was, we think we get a similar number of premium seats as a 787-9. Andrew Nocella, the chief commercial officer, just said that. So he thinks the 789 is the right replacement for a high J763. And I'm shaking my head because there's 100 extra economy seats flying there. 96, I think.
Oh, so a 764 is 242 seats on it.
In a United config today?
In a United config today. And a 789 is 252.
Okay. Is that the 764 in the new Polaris layout with premium economy?
No, I'll tell you that in a second.
So they lose a few seats there, I think. But still, that's fair. But they're only dropping, what, a couple dozen 764s, and they're dropping a ton of 763s?
They have 14 764s is what they have. Right?
So not even a couple dozen.
13 764s. Two are parked.
Right. I mean, like, the 764s are significant, but the 763 family is really what's getting replaced.
Right. They have 36 of those. So, I mean, I guess, what do you compare it to, right? Do you compare it to the high J? Do you compare it to the standard Polaris?
Even the standard Polaris configuration, a 789 is going to have way more seats.
Yeah, but what about a 788?
Closer. And they certainly can do that. I still think, as they say, and he acknowledged, the 788 is a very low premium density configuration for what United typically operates. They see that flying very niche markets, but you know, it's a tough balance to pick how many. They also acknowledge, like, 10 years down the line, cabin layers are probably going to be different. They'll probably be a new product by then when the last of these are delivered. So
a non-high J config, 763, mm-hmm, has 214 seats. A 788 is 219.
Okay.
And the 763, though, the non-high density, does not have a premium economy cabin.
And the 788 does with the 219. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's where they go. But it seems weird. I always struggle with the efficiency of the 788 and how it's a shrink is rarely the perfect solution. So I don't know. That's interesting to me. I think the other part of where this, you know, the whole situation is interesting is so they've got 50-ish 76s that need to be replaced. There's a whole bunch of 777s that also need to be replaced. And on the one hand, they acknowledge that they still have the A350 order. Delivery is not expected before 2030 at this point. But also, you know, they've got 120-ish planes that need to be retired in this cycle, which is not all of the 777s, but it's most of them, and they're buying 100 787s to replace them. So a lot of the 777s, particularly the 200s, it would seem are going to get 787 replacements. Maybe not perfect one-to-one, but that's looking like what's going to happen.
Okay.
And one of the real interesting bits about that is there's the domestic configuration.
Yes, the cargo ship, as Steve likes to call it.
And so, there's not really a 787 configuration that matches that, but United has also in the sort of Q&A they did with media announcing this order or before announcing the order, one of the really interesting things Andrew Nocella said is essentially the 787s are too good to immediately just put those on domestic routes. So he sort of is anticipating a trickle-down play where we might start seeing 787s flying long haul, and maybe instead of just 77As, the original non-ERs, you'll start to see the older 777ERs, 200ERs, start to fly that domestic configuration and domestic routes. And so they'll slide those down in terms of the sort of value proposition they deliver because they can bring more Polaris seats and whatnot in on the 787s.
Interesting. So they have 32 777s that were delivered in the 90s.
So by the end of this decade, those should all be gone. And they also said, you know, not guaranteeing anything, but if you look at the timeline, it should be 2027 or so before the first 777s start to retire, which I guess probably puts them right around 32 years, I think, is for the first ones there, which is pretty incredible. Also, I suppose part of that will depend on if there's still a market for cargo conversions on them. from what that market looks like, right? There's a lot of, and if anyone wants a 77A for cargo conversion, I can't imagine, but you never know.
Yeah, and they have another 22 that were bought by 2002. Then there's a big gap from 2002 to 20.
Are those deliveries or bought at?
Deliveries.
Okay, because that's, is that the Continental fleet?
No, it's UA planes.
Interesting.
I'm going to have to look up the Co ones individually, because the Co ones have the, when they were moved to United date.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. But anyway, if you sort by age, I think I'm a Fear Legion plane spotter, sort by age, and it'll tell you there, as opposed to delivery date. But either way, it's still, there's a lot of planes that are getting replaced. But yeah, so if you do those 30 and then another 22, I mean, that's your other 50 that they're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, both Kirby and Glatterman, as the CFO, said, we like the A350, we think it's a great plane. Right now, we can't afford to slow down our pilot training process to onboard a new fleet type, which is why they're not considered. And the 350 is too big to replace 767s. It's really a 777 replacement. The fact that they are replacing 777s at the end of the decade, though, sort of belies that part of the answer. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, obviously, what happens with that 350 order if they ever take them. But a lot going on there. And then, oh, by the way, a bunch of Maxin, including 80 more Max 10s.
Wow.
So United is definitely bet big on that. It was interesting. Someone asked on the Q&A about the certification issues, and we've talked about that a lot. It did not make it into the NDAA, which is a Defense Authorization Act, which is the must-pass. So right, if it had gotten into that, presumably Boeing would have been very happy. It now likely won't get passed this year, and someone's going to, in Congress next year, is going to have to go back and retroactively reallow the MAX 7 and the MAX 10 to have the older flight deck alerting configuration. Kirby is vehement that it is the right, it is a safer solution because it's common with the 8 and the 9. And he also had an interesting tangent he went off on about how it's critical for the American economy, because Boeing is the largest exporter, and these are high-tech jobs that the country is trying to re-onshore, and how allowing, you know, it's not a discussion of, you know, it's basically a discussion about, do you want these to be airlines to be buying planes produced by Americans or being produced in Europe and in China? And I mean, sort of skipping over the part where Airbus has an assembly line in Alabama, but whatever. But even with that, the bulk are still produced in Europe and then in China, much higher volumes than it, you know, in Alabama. Of course, Boeing does have a finishing line in China too. But it was interesting to hear him get so, I worked up might be exaggerating a little bit, but he got into it about how it's the right thing to do. You know, as Americans, we should support that because it's good for the economy. So.
Yeah, in many ways, it's like the old car thing, right? If you buy a Honda that's made in Ohio versus a Ford, are you actually buying an American car or not?
Yeah. But, I mean, in those cases, I don't know how Honda manages, you know, sub-assemblies, right? For the aircraft, certainly, you know, Airbus literally ships, they usually have a cargo vessel that they use where they custom design, where they load fuselage pieces and wings and stuff and ferry them across the Atlantic. And there are components that come from United States companies in every Airbus, and, you know, from seats to avionics to whatever. But the big pieces are all assembled, and then the final bits are put in, you know, shipped in and put in. It's the final assembly line, not the manufacturing line. And I don't know how Honda dealt with that, but
I mean, the car manufacturers do a lot of the same, right? In some cases, they build the components here, but like BMW, right? They have a massive plant in South Carolina, but all the powertrain mostly still comes from Germany.
And yeah, I just don't know. So I believe you. It's interesting to see how that comes together. Yeah. So,
I mean, I imagine the Maxin that they're adding are probably targeting replacing the Airbuses, right? Some of those Airbuses are almost 30 years old.
Yeah, the A319 and 320 family as it exists today is basically, I think, is being replaced by the earlier order So remember 2 years ago now? 2 years ago? Was it last year? It was last year. Sorry. May 2021, United announced its 270 single-aisle aircraft order. It was a mix of 321neo and 737 MAX. But with this new order, United now has 443 pending MAX orders and a total of 700 new aircraft firm orders over the next decade, which is just an incredible number.
It is, but when you think of it, like I also get that and the next generation 737s, right? Continental started taking deliveries of those in like what, 98?
Right. So I think the stuff he's talking about, this next round of orders, the 56 new ones, I think Latterman's comment was, this is just extending our order book into the back for single aisle of a natural replacement, but into the back half of the decade. We were done at 26, and we know we're going to need more after that. And so this is, right, the first round of these replaces the 757s and the 320s and the 319s. This next round starts to replace some of the older 738s and maybe some of the 73s Gs, the 737-700s too.
Right. But, so, I mean, they don't have anything to replace the 700 in the MAX family.
But there is a MAX 7 if United shows that, they won't. And so, yeah, you mean, the question becomes, do you want something that small? Do you need the performance? Because, right, the 73G, the 700 series is sporty, let's say, right? In theory, the 800 with the short field performance gets them their Santa Ana and Burbank and whatever they need there. But I don't know. There are certainly some gaps in the fleet right now, potentially.
Right.
But it'd be cool to see it, but I don't think we're going to see an A220 order anytime soon. Not from United.
Yeah, I somehow doubt that.
Which is too bad, because it's a nice plane. Anyway, any other thoughts on this United order before we move on?
Oh, I mean, it's big.
It's big. They would not provide a dollar number. Obviously, the release will have a formal, like, you know, list price values, but this doesn't come, you know, we know United doesn't pay anywhere close to us. They did actually share, though, I think $9 billion in capital expense for more than 100 Maxin in, or 100 single aisle planes in 2023, and $11 billion CapEx in 24 for more than 150. They're going to take two planes a week in 2023 and three planes a week in 2024.
Lot of planes.
It's the induction process and getting that done. I mean, literally people nonstop flying to take deliveries. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's just going to live in Seattle for it.
And in Hamburg and in Toulouse and in Mobile.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they ordered Airbuses too.
Yeah. Actually, I bet it's Hamburg. I think it's just the 321 Neos, which are all in Hamburg still right now. But anyway, moving on. Swiss. A350?
Yeah, that was surprising.
I don't know. It'll be so coming in 2025. Swiss, did you watch that video?
I have not watched the video.
So the video is cute. They actually did a really nice job of like showing people walking around and like into door number 3, into floor number 5. They did some cute stuff with showing like turning the heading on a navigation computer to heading 350. They did some really neat bits to bring the numbers together. And then announce, oh, by the way, we're going to start flying the 350s in 2025. You think they'll have first class?
I mean, I believe so. They even have first on the 330s.
Yeah, I agree. I think Swiss, right? Lufthansa doesn't, which is sort of why I asked that. But I think Swiss would.
Yeah, I mean, can't imagine Swiss not having first. I guess, what are the 350s replacing the 77Ws?
It would be early in the life cycle to replace those, I would think.
I would agree. And the 340s are all gone, I thought.
I mean, they've got some 330s also, but that's size-wise, it'd be a big upgauge.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to grow. We'll see.
I mean, according to Airfleet, they have 5 active 340-300s.
Yeah, those should go. I mean, this is still a huge upgauge, but a good choice to replace those finally.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they have a lot of planes, right? They've got 11 330s, 5 340s, and 12 777s.
Yeah, and they did not indicate how many the 350s are coming. We'd have to go back and look at the further boat.
Now,
the Lufthansa Group order book and see what's pending.
Is this something that was explicitly ordered for Swiss, or is Lufty just punting some planes over?
Sure, why not? It's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, the group does ordering on the whole and then allocates them, and sometimes it's premeditated and sometimes it's a little bit of, well, who needs new planes today?
And what about Austrian?
They still find the 76s?
They've got 3 76s and 6 777s.
It's a cute little fleet.
No.
I flew on one of those 76s once. I'm happy to never do that again.
I've been on the 777 multiple times. I've not been on the 76.
Yeah. Etihad A380s are coming back.
And that was pretty exciting.
Only to London, though, it seems.
And I heard maybe with a reduced service, at least for the residents.
That's interesting. If it really is only Abu Dhabi to London, it would probably make sense to reduce the service because it's not the ultra-long-haul experience anymore, right? It's like an 8-hour flight.
But where else were they flying that before?
Oh, it used to go long-haul. Didn't it used to go all the way to Australia?
Did it? I mean, I knew that it was London and Paris were the two big ones.
Yeah, I think they went actual long-haul in the past, like truly long-haul. I mean, it used to go to JFK.
That's true.
So, yeah, I'll try to pull it up while we're talking here. But they're definitely used to have some much longer routes. I guess, right, like, what does the butler get you on board, right? Is it, you know, from a dining experience, do you need the better meal? Like, what are you getting out of that? Right? And why did it matter?
Yeah, because they laid off the butlers during the pandemic. So it doesn't sound like they're bringing them back.
Interesting. Yeah, so from Abu Dhabi in December of 2019, it flew to Charles de Gaulle, Seoul, JFK, Heathrow, and Sydney.
Okay, so they do. Okay.
Yeah, it was daily to Sydney, JFK, and Seoul. 48, so 1.5 times a day to CDG and triple daily to Heathrow. It will become as many as... They're going to bring back as many as 4 planes, which is more than enough to do just their Heathrow service. But, and so maybe it'll be other destinations eventually, but it's starting with just the Heathrow market. So ironically, that was when I was going to actually fly them on, was Abu Dhabi to Heathrow, and I had to cancel it.
I mean, I imagine that's probably one of their more profitable routes as well.
Yes, and I could see, for all the obvious reasons, wanting the first, right, the first class and the upgraded business class available on that, even if no one buys the residence.
Right.
I mean, right, they're advertising bringing back the residence, but I could also almost see them pricing it absurdly and expecting to never sell it and just taking advantage, like ignoring the fact that they're quote-unquote wasting that space on board, either op-up or don't worry about it and just use the other seats to, you know, price nicely.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question of how you navigate that. Like, do you just leave the space dormant or...
Yeah. But I guess, you know, for now, we shall see. They haven't loaded the schedules into the GDS yet, or I guess the Cirium data I have only uploads weekly, and I haven't checked to see if they loaded it in OAG. So
I didn't realize you could use Aeroplan miles for
Really? But you can use them on Emirates now too.
I saw.
That's actually exciting to me. That reciprocity. So it was sort of intimated that this was going to happen back when Emirates and Air Canada announced their partnership, but last week or so, they finally activated the frequent flyer redemption options, and the Air Canada pricing on Emirates long-haul business class is pretty nice.
I haven't even looked.
Yeah, it's cheaper than Emirates and without fuel surcharges. So, you know, winning.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised to see that you can book first with Aeroplan.
Yeah, I didn't look at the pricing on those, so I don't know how crazy those get and if inventory is actually available. But there are some interesting options there.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, it's funny how we've come full circle, right? Like, you go back 10 years ago and the Middle East carriers were the evil ones and everyone was fighting against them. And now we've got, I'd say, Oneworld and Star slowly making up with them. The only holdout is Delta and SkyTeam.
Yeah. I mean, Oneworld is actually just bringing them into the alliance in some ways, right, as members.
Yep.
And then you've got the both United and Air Canada have made significant inroads in partnerships. The Air Canada one we talked about a while ago was a lot of that was focused on India and other subcontinent traffic. United's is a little similar, but interesting challenges there. And it is a very weird and interesting blend of things going on, to say the least.
Yeah, it's just fascinating how we've changed, we've pivoted almost 180 degrees.
Yeah, definitely. What else here? New Mosaic program for JetBlue, TrueBlue?
Okay, well, you're the JetBlue person, good or bad.
Hey. Yes, it is. So from my perspective, the good news, the one thing I really like about it is that credit card spend on any card, you don't even need to pay for the premium card anymore, qualifies as elite spending. And it's a 10-to-1 ratio. So, right, at $1,000 spent on the credit card, I think each $1,000 gets you one credit towards Mosaic status, and you need 50 credits to get Mosaic, which is the same as today. $50,000 gets you status. Mm-hmm. I like that they're doing each 10 credits to your first 50. You get to pick a benefit, so you get some bonus points. You get, and some of them are crap. Like, it's Group B boarding, which, I mean, I guess if you don't have it, is nice. If you already have Mosaic status, the requalifying process, you sort of, the only one that's worth anything is 5,000 bonus points. Okay. And some people might argue that getting double points on a JetBlue vacations package is useful, but I've not been one of those people. What stinks about, it's like, for me, I fly a decent amount, but not $5,000 worth. And I typically have to stretch to spend $50,000 on the credit card. I now can combine those two and fly a little and spend a little, and I'll qualify. Okay. So I like that. The downside is they took away complimentary, even more space, extra legroom seating from the $5,000 Mosaic tier.
Hmm.
So you have to get to $10,000 or 100 whatever credits to get that at time of booking. You can get it at check-in, but no longer at time of booking. And I'm torn on that. They only sort of recently, in the last few years, made that an official benefit, but also taking a benefit away while revamping the program stinks.
I mean, could that be just because they have elite saturation, they're trying to provide better benefits to the higher tiers?
Or trying to make what? Or trying to make more money, right? I don't know. I get the impression that they don't have too many Mosaics.
Okay.
In my experience, I think a lot of the priority boarding comes from American. Admittedly, I see it mostly flying to and from Boston or New York. So that's where you've got the Northeast Alliance situation going on. But yes, they had to come up with ways to give benefits to the higher tier. So there's the 5,000, they call them Mosaic, also the names are stupid. It's Mosaic 1, Mosaic 2, Mosaic 3, and Mosaic 4, which, on the one hand, you don't have to know anything about gemstones or precious metals. You know that 1, 2, 3, and 4 go in order. On the other hand, it's just stupid. So Mosaic 1 comes at 50 credits, Mosaic 2 is 100, Mosaic 3 is 150, and Mosaic 4 is 250. So there's a big jump there at the end, which is in line with how the big players are sort of tiering their programs. Most of the Mosaic benefits come just at the regular 50 tier, Mosaic 1. So that's, you get extra legroom at boarding, but you get your free bags, you get, what else, a free drink on board, some various other things. An extra legroom at check-in now. It used to be, today is the time of boarding, at time of booking, going forward will be only at check-in. Mosaic 2, all you add is the extra legroom at time of booking.
Okay.
Mosaic 3, you get 4 upgrade certificates to Mint. But they haven't said how many certificates will be required to upgrade.
Or assume one if it's the same upgrade, but
I'm assuming it's 1 for domestic and 2 for transatlantic. And then there's potentially a seasonal or high demand double, right? You know, last seat availability, you can use double kind of thing. So it's 2 or 4. So you don't get that many upgrades. And then if you get the Mosaic 4, which is now, $25,000 worth of spend on the airline, you get two more upgrade certificates. So now you're up total of six. And you get four one-way Blade tickets in and out of New York. So you get helicopter transfers, which is cool. But, like, I don't see the high-end appeal of the program based on those what they're offering just for the upgrades.
Well, so let me ask a question, right? How easy or how hard is it to spend 10, 15, 25 grand on JetBlue versus, like, you know, I know on the legacies, if you're flying for and paid J, that can rack up very quickly.
Sure. And so, yes, if you're flying transcons or transatlantic and paid business class, you will hit those numbers very easily. If you're flying enough to, if you're flying transatlantic, you know, to London on JetBlue and Mint on the regular, you'll probably hit your, you know, once a month or so, you will probably hit that 25K level and you will get your Blade transfers for a couple of the flights. Maybe you'll be able to use some of your certificates to bring someone with you on one of the trips and, like, you know, or on a vacation also instead of your business trip. But I think the numbers are very, very low. I think the number of people that are hitting those targets is going to be pretty low. They don't have the $10,000 ticket to India.
And that's what I was alluding to, right? Like, they're going to have Paris next year, London right. And Paris, like, for high, those are probably the most expensive tickets they sell.
Yes.
Right. And so, and since they've entered the market, prices have come down across the board on everybody.
Yes.
So I, like, you know, I'm looking for a couple of days in January, it's like $1,000 each way.
Yeah. January is super cheap. There's actually, I don't know if it's still running, they had Mint award seats on sale in January and February on some days. It was super cheap. Like, very nice market.
The one nice thing I will give them credit for is I didn't realize they're flying on a T2 in Heathrow, and because they're using a single aisle, they don't have to go to the remote tier.
But they do.
The plane was at, yeah, this morning when I left, the plane was at the in the main building.
Interesting. So the day I arrived, this is actually funny, when I took the inaugural over there a couple of years ago, or last summer. Yeah, it was last summer now. And it was, we pulled into the main part of T2. And I was like, oh, this will be easy to get out of here when we're done. Like, when I go home in a couple of days, no problem. And we had been reassigned to the remote pier. I think they only did that for the inaugural because they were doing a press conference right there. So they wanted to make it easier for everybody. So maybe it switches by day or other things when other people, but, like, right, I think they float around just because their usage is lower. Also, things have changed since then in terms of slot utilization at the airport and who gets which gates. So, and times. So, right. We'll see. But yeah, now the it will be. I'm skeptical that it's a huge draw to sort of keep people spending money. Like, the value proposition of those extra upgrade certificates that they haven't really described yet, and the Blade passes is relatively low in my mind, but. And certainly the Blade passes are useless if you're, say, like, Boston-based.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who believe there's a lot of value in status and don't really look at the value of the status for what it really is.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's that. I guess they're JetBlue's open, they'll become Mosaic Forest now. anyway, Air India. We've talked about them a lot lately, but they're making news, so why not? New interiors coming to the legacy fleet, $400 million to spend. They're going to add a premium economy cabin. And they also have started taking some of the old Delta 777LRs. I think they're bringing five of those online for some of the flights like Bangalore to San Francisco, which are very long. And those, they actually kept the original Delta interiors on them. So, but they don't sell premium economy yet. So you can basically get premium economy seating by buying for economy pricing on Air India.
Well, it's shabby even until they figure out how to price it, but
yeah.
Really sell it.
Yeah.
I also heard there's rumblings of them placing a wide body order as well.
There have been rumors this week of a potential 500-ish airplane order. Reuters carried it, and a few others sort of had some bits about it as well. So yes, that would be wide bodies and single aisles. Like, I don't know. It's, I know Tata Group has some money and there's a lot going on. We talked about the Singapore Airlines investing in the merger with the Star as well, but this is another $400 million. If they start buying planes, like, someone's got deep pockets to be, or needs to have deep pockets to make all this work.
Yeah, somebody, yeah. And I mean, Tata has the money, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Oh,
but is it worth spending on Air India?
I mean, if they're thinking about spending this kind of money, they must have some sort of confidence and it is worth it. It's worth their time. Because what I didn't realize until recently was that when Air India originally came into being, they were owned by Tata until
the end. Yeah, it was a Tata Group company back in the day. So that's a fun return. But anyway, speaking of aircraft interiors, Porter has announced some details of their new Embraer 195E2 fleet. It's going to still be an all economy configuration, but not entirely. They're going to sell what they're calling Porter Reserve. This is another branding cluster where none of their names have spaces in them. The Porter Reserve is all one word with a capital, well, a lowercase r, and then another lowercase r, then a capital R.
Who needs punctuation?
Yeah, E. Cummings would be super happy. It's going to be extra legroom, plus refundable, plus bags, plus hot meals on longer flights. But if you buy an economy class ticket, you can also buy up to slightly extra legroom. It's like it's 36 for Porter Reserve, which is basically a premium economy product on board, but still a 2-2 layout. Some of the other seats will be up to 34 inches, and then the regular Porter, I don't even remember what they're calling their regular economy now, Porter Classic or something like that, also without a space, is 30 inches of pitch. But if you're in the back, you can still buy the hot meals on longer flights. So free drinks, too, if you're in reserve. So it's interesting. They're selling it, but it's like, you know, it's quote-unquote business class or premium economy, but they're selling it not at a business class price is the argument.
So I guess the question that I have is, I mean, this is really going away there from their core business of Billy Bishop.
Yes, the 195s are going to fly out of Pearson and then also Montreal, Ottawa. First long-haul route, they're going to bring on to Vancouver as well.
Yeah, so the question that keeps coming up for me is, are they just diluting themselves and just compete with everyone else now?
Yes.
And is this good long-term strategy?
Maybe.
There's a lot of competition developing it.
Low-cost and ultra-low-cost carriers. Right? I mean, the Toronto to Vancouver market also has Canada Jetlines, which is the weird ULCC that I'm vaguely obsessed with because they're terrible at press releases. They put out a press release announcing their new onboard vodka.
Okay. I guess that's important.
Yeah. And like, it was, I like lit up because it's pretty funny. Jetlines, Moneybag Vodka, in fact. It's Gene Simmons from Kiss has his own vodka. And on December 8th, last week, they had an exclusive onboard passenger meet and greet flight from Calgary to Toronto. And where he flew, he joined passengers after boarding where he shared samples of Moneybag Vodka during an onboard meet and greet before departure. So that's amazing. He went up there. They got all the passengers on board. He went up and down the aisles and said hi to everybody. And then he got off the plane and let them fly. Yeah. But passengers who flew had a chance to receive a $100 voucher plus some special memorabilia. Yeah, they do some weird press releases. But they did inaugurate their Vancouver service this month. So that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I come back to, does this put Porter at risk with their core business?
No more, perhaps, than, say, Connect Airways potentially showing up and competing with them on their core business. Okay. Right, that's the other thing to consider is their core business is going to start to see some real direct competition. So maybe they have to diversify.
Okay, fair point.
Right. I'm intrigued by the new interiors, if nothing else, just because it is. They also buy free Wi-Fi for the 195s. I'm pretty sure it's free. It's Viasat Wi-Fi. So
that's nice. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, there is coverage up there, but these will be the first domestic Canadian flights wholly within Canada flying with the service. You know, Delta has had transborder flights. United has had transborder flights. American has as well. But even JetBlue has had some of their Vancouver flight. But these will be... We'll have to see how far north they go and how well the coverage reaches. Because you don't generally put satellite coverage over the barren tundra of northern Canada. Speaking of in-flight Wi-Fi, though, JSX, first plane is finally online. They've got Starlink flying.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's super cool. It came online last week. A little later than expected. I mean, depending on which timeline you want to work with. JSX had a contract for a different provider, and that fell apart. So, very late compared to that line, but it was supposed to be offered in October per the original JSX Starlink deal. It finally came online in early December, so six-ish weeks late. It's not bad for the first certification from the FAA and everything else coming together. But rest of the fleet should be configured by the end of Q1, so if you want... in-flight connectivity on JSX, and it's free for them as are included, as they say. Just get on board and the Wi-Fi connects and works. So they're pretty cool. They're pretty excited about that.
Have you flown JSX yet?
I have not. And part of that has been because I never could get the pricing and schedule to work for me. And part of it was every time I thought I was going to like go do it and go out of my way to make it work, I was trying to also get one of their in-flight connectivity flights.
Got it.
And they keep delaying and delaying and delaying. And so now I'll see how I can make it work. But I figure I can go out to the West Coast sometime towards the end of Q1 and get on board.
Cool.
Yeah. That's all we got, folks. So as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. We do have some bonus topics, some more Emirates news, Air Asia, Pan Am, Air Canada, and Air Greenland to talk about during the bonus episode for our Patreon supporters. If you're interested in that, it's very cheap and very fun, and you can find details on that in our show notes, or go to Patreon and search for Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Otherwise, feel free to leave us a comment or thoughts or ask questions at moredotsmorelines.com. We do still have our Twitter account active at Dots Lines, tucked in amongst the child pornography and other various things that have started to infest that site, so we'll see how long that lasts. And beyond that, happy travels.
Take care.